Okay, welcome back everybody to this final session of the day. I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Joan Goss, the mindfulness doctor, who is here. Joan was a PhD student here at Lancaster, doing research on mindfulness, Zen practice, psychotherapy, and leadership coaching. And Joan, once she got her PhD, went out, set up her own business. And so Joan is here as part of Lancaster University Enterprise Centre Startup Stories. And they basically support and bring back our alumni to come here and tell you a bit about their experience and what they've done after graduation with their PhDs and with their research. We do have somebody at the back who is actually going to be illustrating the talk whilst Jan is here. And if you just want to wave from the back there. So if you want to see the illustration at the end, I'm sure you can, and I'm sure we'll be able to put that online as well. So as I say, I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Joan Goss. Over to you.
Thank you. So I've got 10 minutes to tell you about my journey, basically. I'll just give a little bit of background. I've always been self-employed, so for me it was kind of a no-brainer, really, going into self-employment once I finished my PhD. I used to own a restaurant, and that was very stressful. And I decided to come back to academia in 2000. I sold my restaurant, and I'd been at university when I was 18, but I was 40 years old then, so I decided to come back into education. Didn't really know what I wanted to do. I live in Lytham, so near Blackpool, and I went and did a photography degree for 3 years at Blackpool and Clark College, which is really good. It's a Lancaster accredited degree, really good university for course for photography. No idea where that was going to lead me, and I was like, oh, 3 years, you know, God, 3 years without getting paid and, you know, going back and just enjoying myself seemed quite an indulgence. But that journey sort of took me on a 12-year journey, really. So from 2000 to 2012, I did my photography degree. I wrote about photography and the therapeutic process. Then I did my master's and I wrote about creativity and spirituality. And then I came to do my PhD in Lancaster in 2008 and was interested in psychotherapy, creativity and spirituality, and what was common with those three areas. And before I started my PhD, I sort of got the answer to that mindfulness. Somebody gave me a magazine with an article on mindfulness, a journal, a mindfulness article in it. And so my PhD became about mindfulness. So over that time, over that 12-year period, I sort of previously been in business to make money, but not very successfully, really. And when I came to finishing my PhD, I decided that, you know, I would go back into self-employment, but that was really about doing good in the world rather than just the sort of priority of making money. So over that 12-year period, I worked quite a lot in mental health. So I did a lot of work up in Blackpool with all sorts of discrete groups, mind and mothers of sexually abused children, and homeless people, really, you know, sort of really quite demanding, challenging work. Worked in the prison service as well. And I was doing quite a bit of art therapy, so I did some art therapy training on that journey as well. But when I came to do my PhD, I decided I wanted to work more with well-being And it seemed to me there was plenty of help for people that were in those difficult situations, but then for kind of the majority of people who were just struggling on a day-to-day basis with stress, it didn't seem like there was much happening for those sort of people in the way of support, the majority of us. So that's sort of my motivation for doing my PhD. It was about getting clearer about what I offered. I knew that what I was doing with people worked and made a difference, but people would say to me, so what do you do? And I was like, well, I don't really know what I do, but it works. So doing a PhD for me was very much not about becoming an academic. It was about getting clear about what I do and making a niche for myself. So I entered into that PhD process with that sort of in mind. So that was a bit of a strange journey because I started off in religious studies and then I moved to health research. I did some empirical research in health research and on mindfulness, going out and doing one-day workshops in organisations on mindfulness with all sorts of different people. And then what happened was I went to a boot camp here in the university that FAS had, the Enterprise Centre in FAS had organised, and realised there were quite a lot of other people actually that were doing PhDs and postgraduate research who weren't necessarily interested in academia, and that there was this big support network at the university for people that wanted to do things like me. So through that I found out about all different sorts of research, that all sorts of different funding that there was for carrying on after your PhD. And the first research funding, or the first funding that I applied for, was a knowledge exchange fund, which I think that must have been through FAS. And it just seemed like the perfect fit for me because it was asking for people who wanted to take their research and take that out into the wider world and sort of disseminate their research in different ways other than academia and publishing papers, which is, I was quite clear I didn't want to do that. So I applied for that and I was awarded that. I was awarded £3,000 for that. And that enabled me to run more of the workshops like I've been doing as part of my empirical research and invite people to those. So I didn't get paid for that work. I was offering my time, but it gave me some money to be able to. I used Forest Hills and organised some days and invited people who I felt would be influential. I worked with Lancashire Constabulary, and then different people from the university suggested people, and people just kind of came to those. And a lot of those contacts have been really useful for me since, actually. I'm still in touch with a lot of those people, and they get in touch and offer me work, which is good. So I had that £3,000 funding. And then I found out that there was a pot of money in FAS, and that was I was able to use that for building, having a website built. And then also there was funding. The last funding I had was unlimited funding, which was for social enterprises. So my idea for this, and I had £3,000 of funding through Unlimited as well. My idea for the unlimited funding was to develop a course that I would then take out into organisations, and that there'd be a tiered payment system which would allow me to then work with organisations that couldn't afford to pay for it. Anyway, that didn't happen. but I don't think it's setting the questions that they asked me to answer, about failures. I don't see that as a failure. All the way along, things have happened and I've been quite flexible. I guess these are mindfulness skills, I practice mindfulness. Just being able to sort of go with the flow a bit more, and noticing when doors are opening and some are closing, and responding accordingly. So I had really great support through FAS, particularly through the university, and that support's still ongoing actually. Amanda Brooks, who asked me to speak today, she's often in touch and gives me a lot of support and connects me to things and has been there to help me through that process. And so now at the moment I'm sort of a bit of a crossroads with things. I'm undertaking some coaching training, some leadership coaching training. So I've been working quite a lot with people with anxiety, and I do quite a bit of corporate work, and I work with private clients, give talks, run retreats, run courses. So I sat in on the talk about becoming an academic. I thought it was not really much different, actually, that full on, you know, working for yourself, that full on having to be self-motivated and decide what you're going to do and how, you know, wearing all the different hats is very similar to being self-employed. So I'm starting this coaching, I'm on this coaching course, and with that I'm going to start to do mindful leadership coaching. So that's the idea with that. So things have changed over the 5 years since I finished my PhD. But all the time I've sort of been just getting clear about my process, where I'm going with that, what I'm doing with that. My values and what I set out to do really has remained the centre of that, and the sort of integrity in that journey, but just noticing how that journey has gone in different directions than I'd probably anticipated it was going to go in. And so, being open to that and being open to the process changing. It's the last question I was asked to answer is what I felt I would offer to other people if they were embarking on that journey, that sort of self-employed entrepreneurial journey, is to trust really what your heart says. So if there's something that you feel passionate about and you feel that's the direction you want to go in, then keeping hold of that. So for me, through that journey, I've very much kept hold of that. It's about helping people to be less stressed, I suppose, would be a way of putting it. Helping people to develop, to sort of realise their potential. And so the way I'm doing that has changed over time, over the last 17 years, I suppose. But remaining true to sort of what I believe, and maintaining that integrity and authenticity in following what is important to me and following my heart. So if there was anything I'd say that joins it all together, that's the main thing, you know, which, if we're doing research, then usually there is a passion there, you know, with what we're doing. And so there's a big crossover. I see a big crossover in even going through that PhD process and the tenacity that takes and the willingness to work hard and you know, having a setback and just keep going on and being able to motivate yourself. That's really, that's really fundamental to working for yourself as well. So, yeah, so I think to sum it up sort of in a nutshell, I would say to be authentic, to keep that integrity, to be true to what is important to you. And then another thing that I've realised that I've done, which is good when you're asked to do these things, it helps you to reflect on what you've done, is to continue saying yes to things. So, you know, something like this where Amanda has asked me to come today, and well, it changed kind of along the way, didn't it? I ended up with Paul asking me to do this conference. They're just saying yes to things and being open to networking with people and suggestions. So, you know, that again, as I say, I sat in on the seminar on academia, becoming an academic, and the crossover is quite startling, really. So, yeah, I think that's probably my 10 minutes. That's a whistle-stop tour. So has anybody got any questions that hopefully I might be able to answer?
Hi, thank you so much. I really enjoyed what you said, because I'm also doing a PhD, but I'm also very passionate about freelancing and that kind of stuff. And I think it's true, like, when you work so hard in the PhD and often it's unpaid, or it's not as, well, I mean, you spend so many hours that, you know, no one is paying you or but you are so passionate about the project that you can just do it anyways. And I was just wondering if you have any advice when you have a lot of interest. And I think as you were talking about your journey, you also have very different interests. Do you think, is there any way to combine them all in a final vision, or do you definitely need to focus first and then let go of what is not as important?
Yeah, I think I've kept those same interests, and so for me the PhD process was about getting clear about all the things I was interested in psychotherapy, creativity, spirituality, and that sort of personal development journey. So that's been at the centre of everything I've always done. It's just been a case of refining that process. And I think you just have to be patient with things. You know, things take time, and it takes time to get clarity about where you're going and see what opportunities come, you know. But if there, you know, you need to find that core thing that really is at the centre of what, you know, motivates you, because you've got to have that motivation, haven't you? It's like doing a PhD, you know, if you haven't got the motivation to do it, it becomes really hard work. So, I think just sort of trying to distill it down to find a common denominator, really, that was what I want, that was what the PhD was about for me, it was finding that common denominator, and then that ended up being my path, you know, so. Does that help?
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay. Anybody else?
When you finished your PhD, did you walk out with no money?
Yes.
And then you talk about these little pockets of funding, but
yeah.
How did you survive?
They're just kind of, those little pockets of funding just, I don't know, they just sprung up as I needed them. It was quite, you know, sort of a bit of a miraculous process, really. So I had... It's a few years ago, and I was studying away from the university. Fees weren't like they are now. I got back as much in funding as I'd paid, because I was self-funded, as I'd paid in for fees for doing my PhD. So through that, I was working. I was just doing, you know, just doing little bits of work and just trusting. You know, trust is a big thing, really, when you're going on that process. It's like. Like I said, you know, I sort of set off thinking I was going to come back to university for 3 years, and it ended up 12 years, you know, with breaks in between. But in that time, it was really just, you know, it was a bit hand to mouth. But the help I got here and the funding I got here enabled me to, it kind of gave me a springboard, you know, a bit of a platform then to launch what I was doing. And then, you know, and a lot of contacts have come through the university as well. A lot of work's come through the university. I mean, I did some work a few weeks ago that was one of the departments in the university. So you just have to trust that it, if you're on the right path, you know, I think it works out. And we can manage, you know, and learn how little I can manage with. Anybody else?
I had a question, Jan, but my question is very much around sort of mindfulness as that concept.
Right.
And in terms of mindfulness as a concept, it's very Eastern in its traditions. And how applicable, easily applicable, do you find it to the sort of very UK context? Where people can be a little bit sceptical about the benefits.
Mm-hmm. I think scepticism is falling away pretty rapidly with mindfulness, because there's so much scientific, you know, neuroscience, and also research in every area possible. There's so much research being done now proving its efficacy. And I guess, you know, it's traditionally, it's a Buddhist practice that's part of the Noble Eightfold Path that the Buddha taught. But it's been taken out of that context and secularized to an extent, you know, been used in a clinical context, which has helped with that. But basically, people are people, aren't they? You know, wherever they are, we all have, you know, that human condition is pretty much the same wherever we are. people have the same stresses, the same worries, the same fears. And what I find is, you know, I work with people in all sorts of different areas and from all different walks of life. And, you know, there's something about mindfulness that is so basic, so fundamental. You know, we work at such a fundamental level to develop a set of skills which are really highly transferable. And so for most people, you know, that there's something there that they just kind of, that speaks to them and that works for them. And, you know, we might not want to adopt the whole lifestyle, you know, it's very much a lifestyle for me, but there will be little things that speak to people that they see the value in, and once they start to do the practice, then, you know, people get results pretty quickly. So you know, any scepticism that may have been there is definitely fallen away by at that point. And, you know, it's the idea is that we use it in our daily lives, we use it, you know, whatever we're doing, sending emails, answering the phone, you know, doing research. I think it was really good for me while I was doing my research, because I'd go and, you know, doing my meditation for half an hour or whatever, and in that space that I would create inside, you know, where all the thinking stops and you just like come down and just find some peace, I'd get answers to research problems in that space, you know. So yeah, it's just been really beneficial for me all the way along, and you know, I've worked with hundreds of people now, and I think for most people, you know, sometimes I'll go to an organisation and people sitting like that, you know, but hopefully by the time I've introduced them to the idea of it and we've done some practice, then usually people are smiling at the end of it, so, yeah. And it's becoming more acceptable, you know, it's talked about a lot, so.
Have we any more questions for Jan? No, I think so. A big thank you, Jan. So yeah, we've just put a slide up now which gives you a little bit more information about how to get in touch with the enterprise team here at Lancaster. And as Jan said, there's so much that they can do for you around your research and how you can develop your research. It's absolutely worth going along and having